Simon & Schuster Audio presents Networking with Millionaires and Their Advisors. Unique and proven methods for influencing the affluent. A conversation with Dr. Thomas J. Stanley. Welcome. You're about to hear an in-depth interview between Dr. Thomas J. Stanley and Mike Buckey. Tom Stanley is an author, lecturer, and researcher who has studied millionaires since 1973. Dr. Stanley has written several mega best-selling books, including The Millionaire Next Door and The Millionaire Mind. He holds a doctorate in business administration from the University of Georgia in Athens and was formerly a professor of marketing at Georgia State University, where he was named Omicron Delta Kappa Outstanding Professor. Dr. Stanley has found that the most productive way to penetrate the millionaire market is to network with its members and advisors. Networking is the essence of high-performance marketing. It is professional selling at its highest form. This program features case studies of extraordinary sales professionals who truly care about their clients and their prospective clients' needs, often to the point of putting off their own needs. These sales professionals give, give, give before they receive. Let's begin with the story of financial consultant Nelson Paramus. Nelson Paramus was an ordinary sales professional. Emphasize ordinary. He was what Tom Stanley likes to call a master of the ones. He had one client from this industry, and another from that industry, and yet another from yet another industry, and so on. Most were small investors. $500 here, $1,000 there, etc.
Nelson suffered. He has suffered for 5 years as a financial consultant. His best year was probably about $60,000. He would cold call people that essentially had very little money to invest, about 6 hours a day, 5 days a week, had two other people cold calling. And as he said, he had hundreds and hundreds of clients that essentially had no money.
Nelson didn't qualify for a seminar Tom Stanley was about to conduct in his area. Seating was limited to sales professionals who were grossing $200,000 or more per year. Nelson had never even approached half that figure. But he was determined and courageous. So he snuck in.
He showed considerable courage and was blatant enough to walk right into this seminar that he was not invited to and sat right in the front. In fact, he asked questions during the thing and interrupted me. But, you know, I think it's interesting because I like people with courage. And he has it.
Where did he start? What were his first steps after he snuck into the seminar and got some tips on networking?
Well, he asked questions during that period of time, and then I thought it was rather interesting. I guess after the seminar was over, he called my office about 10 times asking questions. He was, you know, a kind of character that was just full of vigor and excitement. And he did call, and what he said is, look, I am a sinner. I've got 500 clients. They were 500 occupations. They're investing $100 or $500 or $1,000. You know, what should I do? So the first thing I ask Nelson, I also ask people this, it's very, very important, who's your best client? And we started with that, and he wasn't really sure who his best client was or if he'd had one. And I said, well, let's look at it another way. I said, you know, Nelson, I have been in New Jersey giving seminars in the last couple of months. On three different occasions when I was in northern New Jersey, I was in three different hotels, and there were three different meetings of three different industry trade association meetings. Frozen food, food distribution, food processing. And I noticed that these people are extremely wealthy, typically. They're the owners of their own companies. And I walked into these meetings, looked around, talked to different people. No one that competes with Nelson is there. So we have the highest concentration of wealth for a couple days at these meetings, northern New Jersey, food processing, capital of the United States in a lot of ways. And there's no one there from your industry. So I said, Nelson, do you have anyone in the food industry? He said, I have one client in the food industry. It's a small food distributor. So I said, Nelson, I want you to call this man. Find out what he reads. He said, well, I want to know what he reads. I said, find out what he reads and start reading it and start to influence other people. So what Nelson did is he called the man, and the man told him the publication that he read, Food Distribution Something. Nelson called the editor of Food Distribution Something and asked the editor if she would be interested in having some of Nelson's ideas on investing, managed money, and other things published. And he said, I can supply you with a manuscript and so forth and so on. This woman was so excited. It's the first time in life that she's ever gotten a call like this. She asked him to immediately fax the manuscript, which he did. It was published in a very short period of time. So Nelson immediately has established himself, to some extent, credibility of people that are in an affluent industry within his region. Let me tell you something. In the three-state area that Nelson serves, in one of those states alone, there are 2,300 food processors. 99% of them are family-owned businesses. These are very wealthy people. I would estimate that there are at least 5,000 food processing companies within the three-state areas in total that he operates in, plus another perhaps 20,000 types of wholesale retail distributors. So he has essentially targeted, using the concept of networking, to go after these people.
So he wrote an article for this trade publication on making sound investments.
It was the simplest article. It essentially was five paragraphs on the pension and tax-saving ideas that the government provides business owners. And it said at the bottom of the article that Nelson Paramus specializes in helping people in the food industry invest their money and gives people access to 100 of the best asset managers in the United States, and it had his 800 number and his affiliation and other things at the bottom. And that was a start. Now, that's not the genius of Nelson. He's established credibility. That's fine. But Nelson wrote what I consider to be the letter of letters. Now, many people write letters to people. What does it say? Buy my car. Let us have our people come over and give you an estimate of putting an in-ground pool in. Or would you like to look at a $5,000 piano? Not Nelson. Nelson focuses on the need of people. What Nelson did for $100 is he bought essentially the manual of who's who in the food industry. For $100, it listed all the officials of the 25 trade associations in his area, their names, their addresses, and their phone numbers. Now, you could write a letter to these people and say that, my name is Nelson, I'm smart, I want to sell you something, I'd like access to your network. But not Nelson. Nelson wrote the letter of letters. Essentially what this letter said encloses an article that I recently wrote. I've made a commitment to your industry. I'm very interested in your industry. And by the way, I've just started the Food Advisory Council. We have an organization that will provide speakers for free to any food industry-related trade association. It includes a top-ranked CPA that will talk about how to value the business before it's sold. We have a top attorney that will help people in terms of estate planning. We've got a top life underwriter that will talk about key man insurance. And we will have yours truly talk about access to 100 of America's premier asset managers. He wrote this letter and sent it to 25 officials of this trade association. And it doesn't matter if it's food. It could be Twinkies. Doesn't matter. He sent the letter out. Within 1 week, he got a letter back. Let me just paraphrase what the letter said. Dear Nelson, we will need a speaker to talk to 700 owners of major food distribution and processing companies in the United States. Thank you so much for your offer. Can you provide us a speaker within 6 weeks? And it was signed Marv. I like that. Now it's Nelson and Marv, the head of a major trade association. That's how it started. Nelson called me. He said, well, what do I do now?
Get a speaker.
Get a speaker. He wanted a speaker that would talk about, here's the things he wanted to talk about, the food industry, pension planning, and investments. And I said to Nelson, and we discussed this at length, I said, Nelson, your purpose is to be an apostle to the industry. Your purpose is to network. You don't have to give this speech. In fact, to a large extent, Nelson, you're not qualified to give this speech. And he agreed with me. He said, but what do I do? I don't want to turn this man down. I said, Nelson, there are hundreds of security analysts in this country who would give their eye teeth to be in front of a group of 700 people. Some of these people may be taking businesses public and so forth and so on. That's their task. I want you to call the top security analyst on Wall Street, the expert on the food industry, and ask him if he will speak to these highly successful and very affluent people. And that's what Nelson did. The first person he called agreed. So he calls, in quotes, the president of this major trade association back and gives him the good news. They're on a first-name basis. They've become friends. It's very interesting. Now,
Nelson, at this point, probably hasn't sold anything yet, has he?
Nothing. He has not said a word.
But he knows it doesn't matter to this point.
That's right. Because, you see, to be a networker, you have to give before you receive. The theme throughout this discussion is you've got to give before you receive. Never once did Nelson mention me, me, me. It's you, 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 and I'm committed to your industry. I want to be an integral part of this network.
I can help you.
I can help you.
And sincere. I can really help you.
Absolutely. He is sincere. In fact, he's made a commitment, a lifetime commitment now, to be an apostle to these people, to be an integral part of their influence network.
Let's get back to the story, Tom. What happened after he provided the speaker?
Well, he talked several times with the head of the trade association by phone, and they met in person just to make sure that they were going to get this all straight. Now, the head of the trade association was kind enough to invite Nelson to the meeting. In fact, what he did was he endorsed Nelson to his colleagues and friends at the meeting and said, essentially, this is Nelson. Nelson provided this industry with a free speaker because it would not be unusual for a speaker of this quality to get $5,000 or $10,000 to give a speech. Got him for free. Nelson did this for us. Not only that, ladies and gentlemen, but I've been so impressed with Nelson, I opened an account with him. Now, Nelson left that meeting after he met these people for several days. He left that meeting with 320 business cards of affluent business owners. 320. These people know him, been endorsed by him.
Now, this is no longer cold calling, obviously.
No longer cold calling. In fact, I asked Nelson, I said, Nelson, now, have you called these people back? And this was shortly right after the meeting. He didn't call a lot of them back. He called 50. 10 opened an account by phone out of the 50. Now, I'll tell you this. I know a lot of cold calling cowboys that don't get 1 out of 100. Not only did Nelson get 10 out of 50, he got 10 out of 50 business owners, people that make an extraordinary amount of money and have an extraordinary high level of net worth.
So instead of accounts with a few dollars in them, he got some rather large accounts, I would imagine.
He got some large accounts, not only for managed money. Many people were into bonds, municipal bonds, and so forth and so on. But not only that, he has now become a recognized figure in the industry. People will return his call. People will, in fact, talk to him. He has provided a service to these people. He continues to write articles in the industry. In fact, he's writing articles for 4 other trade journals now, one in Spanish, having it translated into Spanish, done extremely well. Interestingly enough, the head of the trade association I mentioned opened an account. And I also understand that one of Nelson's initial accounts that he opened up in this industry came from a gentleman that recently sold his business for $42 million. And he said to Nelson, Nelson, I wonder if you can help me invest $7 million. Now, you try that on by cold calling people and wasting their time. Not only that, but it gets better. Nelson, in the process, and this is where networking comes in so well, while Nelson is calling these business owners and talking to them about investing, he calls a gentleman, he's a millionaire. The gentleman says, well, Nelson, my priority right now is not to talk investments. My problem is that I'm taking a product to the public, but I really don't need a financial consultant. I need a marketing consultant. So what does Nelson do? He calls another contributing editor to the same journal who writes the column on marketing and says to him, excuse me, sir, I do market investments, but my purpose in today is calling you about perhaps something that you can help with. I just prospected a rather successful business owner who's having some problems taking this product and getting it on the shelf. He needs a marketing consultant. Would it be all right if I mentioned your name as a potential helper in this regard? What did the man say? Nelson, you're a different kind of sales professional. You're first focusing on my need. You're an expert at networking. What's interesting is, foremost marketing authority in the United States in getting products on the shelf turns around on the same phone call and says, Nelson, let me do you a favor. I'll open an account with you. You see, what we're talking about here is that the best way to get to the top sometimes isn't the straightest direction. It's doing networking, and that's what he does so very, very well.
Does he continue, Tom? I mean, I would think the temptation would be, hey, I've got this group now. I really don't have to do anything more for them. I don't need to provide speakers or whatever. I already got them wrapped up.
No, in fact, Mike, it's a continued effort. He's made a commitment to write articles. He's continuing to supply articles to these people. He's constantly talking to them about their needs. Not only that, But he's expanding this food industry council by putting more and more people into it that we're going to provide speaking and so forth and so on.
Now, Nelson's expertise is in the area of investments, right?
Right.
Does he key his expertise when he writes these articles to the food industry? Does he look for things that are more specific to them, such as retirement plans, which can be specific to any industry, but I mean, does he look for what the kinds of financial advice they could use?
Actually, Mike, to a large extent, there is some of that, but these things are so robust just by the fact that he is in this journal or these journals gives him tremendous credibility. It says that I understand your industry. And yes, some of the verbiage is directed in that industry, but business is business, and many of the pension laws have nothing to do specifically with any industry. It's more of a generic concept. But let me go on and just tell you how he networks. While he's talking to prospects, while they're calling him in some cases, he's calling them. He runs across a multimillionaire that says, well, my priority today, Nelson, is not investments. Let's get back to that. I'll tell you what I'm really interested in. I need to move my plant from Long Island City, New York, to New Jersey. Now, since you're part of New Jersey, Mr. Paramus, I wonder if there's something you can help me with, since, in fact, you are an apostle and a major networker here. What does Nelson do? He gets off the phone and calls the biggest commercial realtor in New Jersey and says, sir, I'm calling you today. My name is Nelson Paramus. I am a financial consultant. And he says, but I don't talk to financial consultants. Sir, I'm not calling you today to talk to you about investments. One of the people that I've been talking to in an industry that I think a great deal of told me that he needs to move his plant from New York to New Jersey. Would you find it presumptuous if I mentioned your name? Now, what did the man say? You're a different kind of financial consultant. You're my apostle. Well, he's going to get that account too. So what we're talking about here is that networking is much broader than selling any specific product or service. What salespeople don't recognize is the fact that if they're good at selling, they have a certain level of marketing genius. They can sell not only their product, but they can help other people sell theirs. And that's what Nelson Paramus does so very, very well.
Nelson always had ambition and courage, says Tom Stanley, but now he has something more. He has focus and discipline. Instead of making hundreds of calls a week to people in different industries, he now concentrates on one industry. But, you might ask, where does he go from here?
Continue to write. Continue to learn, continue to get more respect from people. One thing that he can do is that once he starts to establish a good relationship, a working relationship with people in the industry, wealthy business owners, logical step, ask these business owners, who are your best suppliers? Again, he's networking, because now what he's doing is he's saying, I have the respect and admiration of someone that is a major player in the food industry. They buy a significant amount of containers. They buy soap. They buy all kinds of things like office supplies and so forth. Call these people and say, my client is one of your best clients. Can we talk? And they will talk. There's a certain compulsion on their part that they must talk. Not only that, but one of the other things that he can do and do very wisely, he can start to prospect the editors and publishers of trade journals, often very wealthy people. And they too have suppliers, and he can take it from that point of view. And in addition to that fact, Nelson can actually provide seminars to these people by bringing in marketing experts on how to market, which he's already done. And he can get more and more visibility from doing these types of things.
And that's the story of Nelson Paramus, a superior networker who will probably continue to break new ground in the world of networking. Next, Tom Stanley tells us how Mr. Gordon, a top gun, set his crosshairs on several affluent networks.
Mr. Gordon's a financial consultant. He's been a financial consultant for about 10 years. I call him Top Gun because he was at Top Gun school. As I understand it, he flew an F-4 Phantom. Received a telephone call from him one day out of the clear blue sky, and he said exactly what I wanted to hear. Dr. Stanley, read your book. Had a powerful influence on me. You can't hang up on these people, Mike, you know. Paid a lot of money for your book, and he told me that he was using several of the systems in there and that he wanted a favor. So first, he focused on my need telling me that he liked my work, and then he talked about his need. What he wanted to do was reprint several pages from my book, Marketing to the Affluent. There was a section in the book where I received a letter from the head of a medical school. And essentially, the head of the medical school was writing to tell me that he did, in fact, believe what I was saying about the fact that doctors make a considerable amount of money but are miserable at accumulating wealth. And then, of course, I wrote back to him, and so there were really two letters in there.
So what did our top gun, Mr. Gordon, have in mind? I mean, why did he want to use both letters?
Well, like most great fighter pilots and great marketers, Mr. Gordon knows how to target. First thing he did was he looked at the anatomy of wealth in his community. Most great networkers understand the anatomy of wealth in their community. One of the pockets of wealth in his community is a very large teaching hospital with a high concentration of all kinds of physicians, surgeons, and so forth, as well as medical students. That's why he wanted access to the letters. What he proposed to do was to send copies of the letters from my book with a letter from himself to the head of various departments at the medical school, including the head of the college itself, suggesting that they take a look at this information that in fact documented the consumption habits of physicians and their low propensity to invest. So what he did essentially is sensitize them to a problem that they are already aware of, but just sensitize it to them. Then what he did in the latter parts of his letter is he introduced himself and offered to provide for free seminars for these people on financial planning and being fiscally conservative.
Well, Tom, did you agree to let him use the letters? And if so, why?
I did agree to let him use the letters. I thought it was quite noble of him to ask my permission. Many people don't, but he did, and he was kind enough to do it. But most importantly, he was proactive. He took the initiative to read the information, and he wanted to leverage it. And that gives me some idea about his commitment to helping people. And he's truly an apostle to people in the medical profession.
Is he an apostle to other groups as well? Has he limited himself to the medical profession?
No, he's very clever. That's not the only target that he flies over. Actually, in the area that he operates in, there's a very high concentration of large construction contracting companies, as well as firms that you would call utility experts, the companies that actually construct utilities. And he's also targeted that group, the owners of these businesses, in a very clever way in terms of his networking scheme.
How so?
Mike, when he told me this, you know, you have a smile on your face because there's so many marketing geniuses out there, and I have the good fortune of being contacted by many of them, and certainly this was a banner day for me at my office. Apparently, Mr. Gordon had just become an associate member of the association that represents these construction contractors. So, in fact, he is now part of their network. He can call these people and mention that he's essentially a member. You don't hang up on a member. He's part of your group. What's interesting is that most people that try to sell business owners are a member of only their own association. You have the Association of Sales Professionals. They go to lunch together, they hang around together, but they're not at the right place. They're not targeting people in the proper way. And it's not, wasn't cheap. It was several hundred dollars for him to join, but he did become a member. But it gets better, Mike.
I don't quite understand, Tom. How does one become a member of a group that you really don't belong? I mean, you're a financial consultant, and you join an association of contractors?
Right, and what you do is when you talk to these people, some of them have essentially a clause in their bylaws that says that people can become associate members if, in fact, they are suppliers to the industry. Most people think of themselves as suppliers to everyone. You know, they are a generic sales professional. They target 20,000 industries, 20,000 different targets. It's ridiculous. But you'll find that many good accounting firms, outstanding law firms, outstanding PR firms, advertising agencies are, in fact, associate members of the industries that they target, the people that they target. And this is what Mr. Gordon did. They did have, in fact, a clause, as I understand it, where he could become an associate member. And because he paid his dues early, they invited him to the orientation party, where, in fact, he rubbed shoulders with several hundred people who are extraordinarily wealthy, who welcomed the new members to the group.
Then what did he offer them in terms of networking and not saying, here, I want to sell you? What did he do to really cement his relationship in that network?
Well, I think, Mike, the term cement and what we would call strategic bombing would be the right phrase. He, in fact, every 2 weeks has an article published in their newsletter, which, let me give you the pseudonym for it. The section is called The Big One.
The Big One.
The Big One. Mr. Gordon, as part of his requirements for membership, writes an article every 2 weeks about the contractor that won the biggest award.
During that 2 week period?
During that 2 week period.
How did he get to do that? I mean, how did he get that task assigned to himself?
He focused on their need and not his own need. Many people who are asked, in fact, to participate in such things as writing, speaking, planning, essentially becoming part of a membership group and being put on committees, what do? They immediately say, no sale here. Don't have the time. Don't have the patience. All I want to do is walk up to people, grab them, wrestle them to the ground, and sell something to them. That's not networking. Now, interestingly enough, let's take two scenarios. Let's say, for example, somehow or other, through a miracle, that you discover that a contractor in your area won a major award. You call them up, and what do you say? The typical scenario is, I want to talk to the contractor that just got a $40 million award. I want to try to sell him something. You'll never get through. Now, on the other hand, Mr. Gordon calls, and sometimes they actually call him. But he calls them and says, by the way, have to write my article. I understand you're the biggest award winner this week, blah, blah, blah. I want to come by and see you. What do they get? They get acknowledgement of their achievement, being publicized among their peers, no stronger motivation. Do they want to see Mr. Gordon?
Of course.
Of course. They'll cancel appointments to see Mr. Gordon. Now, interestingly enough, he's sitting talking to these people for half hour, hour, two, 3 hours, and writes this thing up.
But he's talking to them about their success, what they did to land the big contract.
That's right.
Of this two-week period.
Exactly. And down the road, what essentially he's doing is he's going to meet 20 or 30 very wealthy, very successful, highly euphoric people during a year's period of time. He makes no bones about the fact of who he is and what he does. What does he do? When they turn around and say, okay, Mr. Gordon, what else do you do? And what does he say? I help people in several very specific industries manage their money. And one of them is your industry. That's how he sells.
So he doesn't even really do any arm twisting. He just says, this is what I do.
That's what I do. And he repeated from the first book that I wrote, highly successful, wealthy business owners and others often consider talkers to be hawkers and writers to be experts. And Mr. Gordon is an expert. In fact, in other scenarios, Mike, where people have done this, when we've done seminars, we've said this is how you can network with people. We have had people who are multimillionaires that have come into significant amounts of money because of contracts and other things awarded, who actually will call the financial consultant or the financial planner or the lawyer and say, you write the article on successful people. I want to know how come you haven't called me yet. Have you forgotten me? And, you know, it's the same thing when I interview millionaires. When I interview millionaires, some of them call us and say, by golly, you were in Dallas last week interviewing millionaires. How come you didn't call me? I want to be interviewed. So the issue here is that you're focusing on their need, not your need. And you're networking with these people because you're developing a reputation among hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of very wealthy people, many of whom are coming into significant amounts of money.
How did Mr. Gordon get the opportunity to write his series of articles on successful contractors? He simply called the editor of a trade journal and proposed the idea. Many trade journal editors are hungry for good articles. But you say, I'm a financial consultant, or I'm a life underwriter. I don't know anything about construction or food distribution or poultry. You don't have to. Next, Tom Stanley discusses how to stay within your expertise while targeting a specific trade journal audience.
Talkers are perceived as hawkers. Writers are looked upon as experts, says Tom Stanley. Write an article for a trade journal and enhance your credibility. Take the case of Tim, an enterprising life underwriter who wrote an article aimed at affluent non-citizens. It was entitled, Non-Citizens Should Review Estate Plans.
Let's look at the first sentence. Legislation known as TAMRA, T-A-M-R-A, has quietly, but quite effectively, eliminated the estate and gift tax marital deductions for property passing to a spouse who is not a citizen of the United States. A little bit further on, although property transfer still can occur on a tax-free or deferred basis, these channels have caused problems that can be solved only through estate planning and the use of life insurance. This planning should be accomplished through professionals familiar with this tax law and who are practiced in this area.
So why was this particular article that he wrote about telling them about the differences in the tax law, that it would make a difference in their estate planning, why was it so effective, do you think?
Well, first of all, it's to a highly targeted audience. It's not generic. There are hundreds of thousands of people selling insurance today, and they target what we call the generic audience. This is not a generic audience. If I go back and look at the hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of case studies that we have, what you find is that at least 90% of the most extraordinary sales professionals in America that target the affluent are specialists. And this young man is a specialist. He's picked a highly targeted audience. He has clearly demonstrated his specialty and his expertise. His specialty is understanding their needs and their problems, the ability to solve it, and working in a cohort with highly trained and highly skilled estate attorneys. Interestingly enough, I will wager you that dozens of these high-grade estate attorneys will be calling the author and wanting to network with him, providing him with their clients and vice versa. In addition, he specifically addresses the problem that these people face.
But they can't pass on to their spouse their rich estate.
They can to some extent if, in fact, they use proper trust planning, estate planning, and insurance products. And this article is excellent because it provides clear access to the author. It tells you where he can be found. And it provides the audience with a vehicle to respond by providing telephone numbers, addresses, and so forth. But it also sensitizes them to seek more information.
Yes, it's true that people responding to the article could call another life underwriter. But Tim wrote the article. He's the expert. He took the time to research the problem and offer a solution. Don't you think that those who respond to the article are more than likely to call him? Consider the case of Great Scott, a securities broker who wrote an article for the Jewish Journal of Greater Los Angeles. The title explains it all. An easy way to support Israel. Israel government trust certificates offer an attractive alternative to U.S. Treasuries.
According to Scott, he received nearly 40 unsolicited telephone calls inquiring about the availability of these investments.
They could have called any other broker, but they didn't. They called Great Scott. Jim W., a sales agent for a top insurance agency, is a mentor to many of his younger colleagues. He teaches them the importance of networking. Looking over the client list one day, he noticed that one of the younger agents was servicing the needs of a top poultry producer. One top poultry producer, just one, in a state where poultry is a major industry. Jim W. decided to visit the young agent.
Jim suggested that they make a personal and professional call on the current client that was a large producer of chickens. They visited this gentleman for about an hour. They discussed issues concerning insurance, of course, also relating to the poultry industry. While Jim was in the process of discussing these issues, he looked around the office. It's a large credenza in the office. It was stacked, filled with trade journals. One of the trade journals he noticed was Turkey World. Let me repeat that. Turkey World. But while Jim was there, he requested and got approval for
removing the latest issue of Turkey World from the credenza and taking it with him. Now, it's interesting to me, set the scenario. They're in a town which is considered by some people to be the poultry capital of the United States. This young insurance agent has one client in the poultry business. He's, again, one of ones. They got back outside, and Jim started to page through Turkey World. And what he noticed is that there were several people within stone's throw of where they were sitting or standing or sitting in their car mentioned in Turkey World, in either in the editorial sense or in an advertisement or people on the move or whatever it would be. But there were several people in Turkey World, cited in Turkey World, that were within stone's throw of where they were at that moment. So what he did is he decided, looking at all the options within that issue of Turkey World, and there were many, he came upon an advertisement that was a full-page ad in Turkey World, and it said something to the effect that our competitors say that our deboning equipment is the most expensive in the poultry industry. They're right. It's also the very best. And as I understand it, it had a picture of the entrepreneur with some discussion of who he was and so forth. He was within three blocks of where they were sitting. So they got in their car, drove three blocks, walked into this man's business, Cole, Jim says to the, in quotes, deboning equipment expert, congratulations, great ad. I hope you got a good response from it. Wanted to discuss this with you. We are here in town talking to some current clients, so forth and so on, pleasantries. And essentially, as I understand it, the prospect in this case spent 20 minutes talking about deboning equipment. And then eventually the conversation changed. Finally, the man said, well, what are you doing here? What business are you in? Jim said, well, actually, we're in the investment business, the insurance business, the financial planning business. And he said, but I don't understand. What the H-E-L-L are you doing in the insurance business reading Turkey World? Now, most people don't have an answer for that, but the answer is quite simple. What Jim said is exactly what this man wanted to hear. What Jim said was that they were trying to do a better job, a more effective job, a more professional job servicing the needs of people in the poultry business. And the only way they can do that is to stay current with the problems and issues related to producing poultry in the United States. The man was perfectly satisfied with the answer. So now what we're saying is they walked in there, acknowledged his achievement. They acknowledged his affiliation. They acknowledged their affiliation. They discussed these different issues, but never once did Jim say, you want to buy life insurance. As the Ace of Aces said again, Eric Hartman, inferior pilots can be identified very easily when they're on my tail. They shoot too early before they get close enough to do any damage.
So did Jim sell that man that day, or did he take more time to develop the relationship?
More time to develop the relationship, Mike. Never mentioned the issue of buying life insurance or any other type of insurance product while they were there. They were there for one purpose, to acknowledge his achievement, to develop some affinity, and to understand the needs of this person. When Jim drove back that evening, he made a strategic decision. He told the man before he left that he would be back to him. He would send him some information about what they do. Very low key. Jim laminated the advertisement that was in Turkey World. The next day, he sent him the laminate with a congratulatory note and saying that sometime in the near future, he hoped that they could get back together. 2 weeks later, he was granted another interview with, we'll call him, Mr. Deboning Equipment, and sold him a major league policy.
Why doesn't somebody like Mr. Deboning Equipment see through it? Isn't that just a device to ingratiate yourself to him?
No, because Jim and his agency have made a commitment to the industry. They're very professional people. They're considered to be one of the premier agencies in the United States, and they've made a lifetime commitment to that. So what they're doing here is they're telling this gentleman that they respect him, they respect his industry, and they're going to spend more and more and more time understanding his need and the need of his colleagues in the industry.
They spend time then learning about Occupational Safety and Health Administration regulations, which are encroaching upon the industry more and more these days. They spend probably time learning about pollution concerns that are part of the poultry industry.
Because of the fact that they're becoming an integral part of the poultry industry, my next recommendation would be for them to take the initiative to write letters to people in Congress and the Senate supporting legislation that is in fact friendly to the poultry industry. Now, you tell me how many people in the insurance business have ever taken the initiative to write a letter supporting positive legislation to support an industry that explains a high portion of the revenue generated from clients. They don't do it. But this is a different agency. This is a different mode. This is networking at its highest level. When you send a letter to a newspaper editor or to Congress people and say, I'm against this legislation. I'm against it because you're going to put the people in this industry out of business. I can't sell insurance to people that are bankrupt. You send letters like that to people in that industry, people that you don't even know, and say, I hope I covered all the bases. And I'm sure that your current agent is doing the same for you. I'm sure your current accountant is doing the same thing for you. I'm sure that your current FC is doing the same thing for you. These people are in a state of shock because not one of their suppliers has ever taken the initiative to understand the real problems that these people have.
What's the overall lesson then, Tom, for the young insurance agent that Jim was trying to teach?
Well, he learned a valuable lesson. He learned that the most difficult thing in marketing is to get the first ship in the convoy, the first person in the network, the first client in the affinity group. That's the key to networking. Now he, without Jim's advice, without his suggestions, would be, again, a master of the ones. 500 clients in 500 industries. But now, both he and Jim are prospecting by the turkey world, the Poultry Times Network. It's very simple. It's so simple that people don't see it. In fact, shortly thereafter, they got their next major player in the industry because this person was written up as being the next major supplier of turkey meat to the fast food industry. And when they walked in to talk to this man and said, are you, in fact, Mr. Turkey Fast Food, what was the reaction? The reaction was very simple. Where have you been all my life? How come my other suppliers haven't been here? No one has acknowledged me from Turkey World. They're all reading their own trade journals. They're all dealing with their own problems. They closed him as well. So what we're talking about here is it's much easier to fish in a pond that you're familiar with, where you know that there's a school of fish.
Do your suppliers of services, such as brokers, insurance agents, etc., do they network for you? Do you insist, like you preach to other people to do, insist that they do network for you?
Well, I certainly make it very clear that I would appreciate some network help, but I might point out that the fellow that supplies us with our accounting services does more than accounting. Number one, has offered me several speaking engagements where I would address large groups of sales professionals. Great opportunity for me. Even more importantly, and surprisingly, he called me one day and said, I wonder if I could have several hundred flyers on your books and tapes, because he was going to be out of town and really talking to a large group of apparently top-ranked sales professionals. And he pitched my book and my tapes, passed it out to them. It was very nice of him. Fellow that helps us with our insurance. He happens to be the fellow that also helps the largest law firm in the United States with their insurance. And he wrote a lovely letter to the senior partner, the guy in charge of marketing, and said, might be a good idea to have all your attorneys have a copy of this. Contact Tom Stanley. Very nice of them to do that. So, yes, many of my suppliers do help. And they act as, I would say, apostles and networkers for Tom Stanley. I might also add, which I think is important, the fellow that helps us with our insurance is not only an apostle for me, but he's an apostle to other people that are his clients. He's the protector of the realm. In fact, one of his best clients is a fellow that's in the seed business, world-class person in terms of the quality of seed that he produces.
Well, seed, you mean like plants?
Yeah, like plant seeds.
Okay.
And so one day, our agent, I call him, walked into a garden shop and asked for this particular brand of seed. And here's a 20-year-old clerk that says, oh, you don't want that seed. You want this other seed grown 2,000 miles away from where you live. Well, the insurance agent said, excuse me, I want this seed. And they went back and forth for 5 minutes, and finally the agent insisted, and he did, in fact, get a bag of seeds from the company that is owned by one of his best clients. A lot of people would drop the issue right there, but not if you're extraordinary. This agent went home and wrote a 2-page, single-spaced letter to the head of this large chain of outdoor shops.
Nurseries.
Nurseries. And what did the letter say? Dear Mr. Nursery Owner, recently I went to buy seed. I asked for this brand. One of your retail clerks attempted to shove down my throat brand X. I don't appreciate it, and let me tell you why I use the seeds that I asked for. The man that owns this seed company is local. He supports local causes. He provides an extraordinary product. And I think you should support him because he supports local causes and has a superior seed.
Rather than the guy 2,000 miles away.
Exactly. And then the key ingredient, he sent a copy of the letter to his best client, who greatly appreciates it.
The guy who owns the seed company.
Exactly. You're out there, and you're the eyes and the ears for your clients and your prospects. You're helping these people. It does that work that way. In fact, Mike, if you recall, I mentioned several instances where people have protected the rights and products and services of their clients and prospects. In one instance recently, I noticed that a letter to the editor of the Wall Street Journal was published, and at the bottom of the letter, it said, a supplier to people in the boating industry, producers of boats, marinas, and so forth. The letter listed all the reasons why they should repeal the luxury tax on boats, furs, gems, and automobiles. Wonderful editorial. It said that the tax will not pay for itself. It costs more to collect the money than it does the tax that they will raise. It's driving business from the United States to foreign countries. It's putting people in the boating industry out of business. It's bad for the economy. It listed how many jobs we would lose and all these other types of things. But isn't it ironic that only one supplier to the boating industry took the initiative to do this? Now, where are all the other people? Don't you think that people that own marinas, that sell large boats, that construct boats, that supply them with products and services, financial planners that plan for people in that industry, accountants, attorneys, all these different people, where are they? Why didn't they take the initiative to write a letter like this? Now, you know, if I'm in the boating industry and I have a group of dull, normal suppliers that aren't doing a thing for me except when they find out that the business is bad because the government's getting on our case about taxes and so forth and so on, they send me lovely greetings. You know what it says? We extend no more credit to you. Pay bills immediately. Isn't it interesting? But here's a man that we don't even know who writes something in a Wall Street Journal. Now, you
it
know
says,
what?
I understand your problem. I understand what you're going
That's
through.
That's right. And I'm a supplier to your industry. I appreciate your business. I'm trying to keep your head out of the water. Let's not talk my problem right now selling you something. Let's get this solved first. You know what I do? I call him.
What kind of supplier was this guy to the boating industry?
Well, I believe he made brass fittings or something for boats.
Oh.
So what he was just saying is, I can't sell brass fittings to the boat industry if they're out of business, and I'm going to take it upon myself to do this. It was a wonderful editorial. But the issue here is that the Wall Street Journal will publish 1 in 6 letters to the editor. Those are pretty good odds. Write 6 letters, you get one published. Now, if I was in that position, let's say I was an accountant and I wrote this editorial, and it got published. It's very provocative. Tax laws are very provocative issues. It's published. What do I do? I send a copy to every person in the boating industry. You know what I say? I'm sure your accountant's done the same thing for you. But did I miss anything? I hope you enjoy a copy of this. I hope this will help. Let me know if there's anything else I can do. You know what people are going to say? I know what I would say if I was in the boating industry. I would say, let's talk to this person about helping us with our accounting services or with our financial planning or asset management, whatever it may be. Most people that supply people are only suppliers. They are not apostles. They're not members of the network. I can recall another episode, Mike. In fact, I think you were present. There was a 60-year-old sales professional in the audience, and this is what he said. You can't teach an old dog new tricks, but I'll sit here and I'll listen. And we talked about this concept of being an advocate, being part of the network. Well, after he listened to the discussion, this is what he did. He had one client that sold luxury automobiles. He wrote a letter to his two U.S. senators attacking the legislation that taxed luxury automobiles and essentially taxed the dealers.
Mm-hmm.
He wrote this letter to the two U.S. senators. It said, again, here we go again. The tax won't pay for itself. It's counterproductive. You're putting the entrepreneurial spirit out of business. There are no auto dealers in Russia. They're bankrupt, so forth and so on. Not only that, but he also pointed out that his current relationship with his current client that owned a luxury dealership was a good one. However, this year they didn't sponsor the Little League for the first time in 35 years. His uniform was paid for by that same company. His son's uniform was paid by that same company. No more can they do it.
In other words, senators, here's some of the fallout from what you've done
right.
with
That's
this luxury
right.
tax.
That's right. No one thought about this concept. There is a problem here. You're not taxing the wealthy. You're taxing people that like to buy luxury cars, so forth and so on. He sent that letter to the U.S. senators, but he also sent a letter to 12 other owners of luxury auto dealers that he doesn't even know, with a note. Dear Mr. Jones, I'd love to sell you life insurance. In fact, I was thinking of writing you a note asking for an appointment, but I can't sell you insurance when the government's putting you out of business. I hope I covered all the issues in this accompanying letter that I sent to our U.S. senators. If there's anything else I can do for you, please let me know.
Did he get a response from that?
The day that that letter was sent was a Monday. On Wednesday, 7 of the 12 auto dealers called him and said, thank you very much. And he said to them, I'm sure that you have life insurance, which they did. And I'm sure that your current agent sent the same letter to support you to keep you in business. And what did they say? Are you out of your mind? And you know what they also said? Like, what can I do for you? What can I do for you? He already got several pieces of business out of this. So what we're saying here is that sometimes the most pressing issue is not me, not life insurance. You have to use your marketing genius, the genius that it takes to sell life insurance, to sell investment products, to sell accounting services and legal services, and use that in a better and more positive way to help change the course of business for these people.
Next, Beyond Equipment, Fillings, and Extractions. The story of Dr. J. Conrad Peterbaum, a dentist who uses networking.
No, don't tell me, Tom. You're going to tell me that a dentist is using networking? I thought they just hung shingles out and had people walk in the door.
That's where there are so many unemployed dentists today. However, Dr. J. Conrad Peterbaum, or we call him JP, is extraordinary. In several dental offices that he operates, he ran in excess of $4 million in revenue last year.
My goodness. And how does the networking enter this picture?
Well, he learned how to network from his father, who was an equipment dealer. Let me first relate to the episode of Dr. JP. His father told him always to debrief people that are clients and prospects. Always ask about their needs. How is your family? Does your son need to go to college? Of course, I'm a college graduate and you're not. And let me tell you about how to get this person into college. Simple little things like this that most people never take time to deal. Take a look at your suppliers, Mike. Take a look at the people you deal with, dentists, doctors, physicians, all types of people like this. When was the last time they asked about your need beyond fixing the tooth or repairing the joint? It does pay. It pays big. Because what happens in this case is people get to like you. When they like you, what do? They go out of their way to make referrals on your behalf. So, for example, many of JP's current patients did not go to college. Their sons and daughters want to go to college. So who are they going to ask? He asks them, is your son or daughter anticipating going to college? These are the things they need to be concerned about. It's very nice. But in a larger sense, let me give you one episode. When JP was working as an apprentice in a large, very successful dental practice, many of the patients that were patronizing that practice were members of unions and or executives related to the union or the organization, we'll call it an airline. He spoke to all these people in detail, asking about their needs, as trivial as they may be. One day, a man sitting in his chair told Dr. J. Conrad Peterbaum that he had a problem beyond having an extraction. The problem was very clear. The man was president of his union, and he just learned from the airline that they were considering taking their aircraft to a foreign country to have them all refitted instead of using union machinists and other laborers. He was disappointed. He was depressed. But what did Dr. J. Conrad Peterbaum say? You've got to fight this. You've got to use grassroots support. You know, I fly a lot, he told the man, and I don't want to fly on an aircraft that's been refitted by people in a foreign country. I trust domestic labor. I trust union labor. Let me outline for you a grassroots program of petitions, write-in, call-in letters to selected congressmen and senators that will turn this around. Well, this man is dumbfounded. In other words, Dr. J. Conrad Peterbaum takes 20 minutes of professional time to explain to this man, A through Z, how he would fight this. The man is pumped.
And this is at a time when Dr. J.P. is just an apprentice, you said?
Just an apprentice. But, you know, his father told him, J.P., success is networking. Ask and talk about the needs of other people. And often these are not related to the problem of pulling a tooth, capping a tooth, doing root canal, or putting an implant in. What this man needed was a massage. He outlined these things, and what did he say? I'll support you. I'll sign the petition. I'll write the letters. What can I do? The man was overwhelmed by this. Well, when this man came back 6 weeks later, he requested that he be given Dr. Peterbaum. There were six dentists operating at the office at the time. Receptionist said, Dr. Peterbaum is no longer here. Dr. Peterbaum started his own practice.
Where did he go?
Well, that's what the president of the union said. Where's Dr. Peterbaum? And the receptionist said, we're not allowed to give out that information. They're afraid of losing a good patient. He went back to his office without getting repaired. He called the Dental Society of the state and asked for an updated address and phone number for Dr. Peterbaum, which he got. And the president of the labor union placed a large advertisement in the monthly newsletter that went out to thousands of employees of the airline. And what did it say? Your favorite dentist, the one that we endorse, the apostle to the airline workers, just opened his new practice. Here's how you get there. This is his phone number. We love Dr. J. Conrad Peterbaum.
Dr. J. Conrad Peterbaum obviously goes beyond fillings and extractions. He's a true advocate for his patients. He learned those networking skills from his father, Father Fred.
Well, Father Fred was a highly successful leaser, renter, seller of construction equipment and machinery. Every day that J. Conrad Peterbaum came home from school, he would immediately walk over to his father's business, and his, in quotes, he would told me he would mind the shop. During that period of time, from approximately 3 p.m. till approximately 6 p.m., Father Fred was on the road, they called it. Where was he? He was at various construction sites talking to people that were contractors and subcontractors and asking them two simple things. First, do you need suppliers? What does that mean? Do you need a world-class stonemason? Do you need a top person in terms of bricklaying? Do you need a person in excavation contracting? Do you need a foundation contractor?
In other words, not the direct question of do you need equipment?
Exactly.
But what are your needs?
That's right. Now, what these people were doing is beginning to recognize that Father Fred was there as their apostle. Essentially, he was providing them with leads on suppliers of talent. He was a talent scout. They didn't have to go out and look for talent. Fred was a good judge of talent. So, next question, after he did them a favor by giving them leads about talent, he would assess their needs for equipment. But back on the other side, when you visited Father Fred's, in quotes, showroom, you'd have a very difficult time getting through the front door. There may be 30, 40, or 50, or 100 pieces of equipment in the front of the place, everything from jackhammers to mortar mixers. And when you talk to him, what did he say? Why are you so successful? Father Fred, what would he say? When a stonemason comes and wants to rent or lease a mortar mixer, what does he get? He gets the mortar mixer. He gets a mortar mixer that will work. And he gets one other thing. He gets my endorsement for work. In other words, I not only provide him with equipment, I provide him with revenue. I am essentially a talent scout. That's why so many people come to my place of business. In fact, you won't find an advertisement that advertises his business. It's all word of mouth. There are people waiting at the door there at 6 a.m. They want to talk to Father Fred. Why? He would get these people business. He knew the contractors. He knew subcontractors. He knew the types of people that they were looking for. So when someone would come in there and say, I want to rent, I want to buy a mortar mixer, the only problem I have is that I'm out of work, or I already used one and I can't pay you, what would Father Fred do? Go see Harry at this site at 4 o'clock. He needs you. In fact, I might point out that some of this country's best artisans that came here from Italy and other foreign countries with significant talent as far as being stone masons, carpenters, and so forth, had a particular affinity for Father Fred because Father Fred's father came from Europe and had the same problem. Terrific talent, no marketing skills. So Father Fred provided these things. But what's interesting about this, it goes beyond Father Fred. Equipment dealers are wonderful centers of influence because they're always in the middle of the deal. They know when business is good because demand for construction equipment is up. They know who is renting, who's buying, who's leasing, where the construction sites are. So it's conceivable in one instance where a man was building 600 homes in a large development that he knows all the contractors and most of the subcontractors. What's astonishing to me is that not one accountant, not one lawyer, not one financial planner, not one financial consultant ever visited Fred and said, Fred, what do I have to do to become part of your network? Never once. It's not hard to find the Freds. Just get there early in the morning in an industrial strength neighborhood and look at how many people are out there renting, buying, whatever they're doing with Father Fred.
It seems wild in a sense, Tom, that you're suggesting people like accountants and lawyers and financial consultants should go out into the world
absolutely.
And solicit business rather than waiting for it to come to them.
Well, let's put it this way. Many of these highly trained, highly skilled, highly productive artisans would come to Father Fred and say, I need your equipment. I also need your referral to get some revenue. Many of these people worked as subcontractors on a handshake. It was never a contract. Often they were beaten out of money and there were problems involved down the road, not necessarily because he recommended this type of business, but down the road they did. Wouldn't it be nice to fill the package if Father Fred had a list of attorneys that would be more than willing and delighted to provide pro forma contracts for these subcontractors to have contractors sign and put these things together? They need them. Same thing with accounting. Sometimes they didn't have an accounting system. They kept their money in a box. They didn't know what to do with accounts receivable or accounts payable or anything else. So what we're saying here is that Fred would be the hub of the wheel and the spokes would be these professional service providers. It is not unrealistic to assume that with Father Fred's endorsement, one CPA could get 50 pieces of business, 50 new clients in dealing with Fred.
And how do you get in Father Fred's good graces? Enhance his revenue. Write to the two contractors who are your clients. Tell them about all that Father Fred has to offer. Not only equipment, but his talent pool. Even if Father Fred doesn't get new business from your effort, Tom Stanley says, your effort will be remembered.